The stage is set. Listen and be heard. Because Pilipinas is now on a bigger platform. Hosted by Cookie Tuazon with Marty Tenko, they will feature spoken word acts, tackle topics that keep the mic alive, and the community of artists inspired.
My name is Cookie.
My name is Marty.
Welcome to Bicas Pilipinas. Here we serve words to you on a platter. We share words with you like no other. And we do hope that in the process you will feel full as you embrace all things literary and all things creative. On today's show, we will observe death closely, the way popular culture interprets it, and how one way or another literature helps us in facing it. What does it look like when creativity is a conduit to cope? In Sandman, death is amongst the endless. You know this too, Marty.
Yes.
You have the graphic novels. We listened to the audiobook.
Yes.
Anyway, it's interesting how Neil Gaiman has taken what has long been a figure of fear and transformed death into one of comfort. A friend to help along the way.
That is true.
Bambi's mother cinematic history shocked the kid in all of us with a concept of parental death.
Cookie, that's an understatement. People were traumatized when Bambi's mom was killed.
Oh, yeah. I guess it depends on who the kid is. Yeah. Shakespeare incorporates diverse ideas about death in his works. The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak has death as the narrator.
Ah.
Death is observant, compassionate, and empathetic. He spoke of events not even he understands. Even death is haunted by humans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Marty.
Yes, Miss Cookie.
Let's take this conversation further.
Okay.
On poems that depict the face of death, which ones tugged at your heartstrings?
I found this beautiful poem called There Is No Night Without a Dawning by Helen Steiner. Here goes. There is no night without a dawning, no winter without a spring, and beyond the dark horizon, our hearts will once more sing. For those who leave us for a while have only gone away, out of a restless, care-worn world, into a brighter day.
Lovely.
Yeah. How about you, Cookie?
I take heartfelt interest in these poems.
Uh-huh.
When Great Trees Fall by Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote this poem for fellow poet James Baldwin's funeral.
Ooh.
I also like Crossing the Bar by Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Mm-hmm.
Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
When Death Comes by Mary Oliver.
Uh-huh.
When I Die by Rumi. And On Death by Khalil Gibran.
Ooh.
Now let's hear it from one of our guests, Susan Severino Lara, here to read an excerpt from The Faith Healer.
An excerpt from my short story, The Faith Healer. Lisa tried to insert the tube when the nurses had left, but Martin jerked his head with so much force that the intravenous tubes danced wildly. "Mar, please," she said, noting with alarm her steadily rising irritation. He moaned, meaning to say something, but his tongue remained stiff and indifferent, and did nothing to help his lips shape the words. His voice slid out of his mouth unimpeded and came out as one unbroken wail. Lisa shivered as low piercing groans bubbled from his throat. "All right," she said, her voice skirting carefully any tone of reproach. "You won't have to take this anymore if you don't want to." He grew quiet with a suddenness that answered the question she could not bring herself to ask. Lisa gave him a shot of Equanil, a generous and unscrupulous amount. His eyes didn't follow her as she walked to the door to lock it. They remained fixed, sealing word. She held his claw-like hands and stroked their swollen joints. Those once sure, unerring hands that had gripped scalpels, slit human flesh, and held patient's hands with startling tenderness. She had sat beside him like this before, holding his hands this way, while she offered him gleams of the past that had slipped from his memory, just so he wouldn't feel so unconnected. All she wanted to do now was to keep his hands warm, to find and keep the connection between this man and the one she had kept within her, the one who would never leave. Suddenly his breathing changed, two quick gasps, followed by a long sigh. Lisa found herself breathing the same way, not so much echoing him as striving to become him. "I am here," she said. "You're with me. Only the pain will go, but you'll be right here with me." Again the rhythm changed. The inhalation was as heavy and prolonged as the exhalation. Edema had set in. Lisa hesitated only for a moment. Then she gently cradled his head, removed the two pillows that propped him, and lowered his head flat on the bed. His breathing immediately became more labored. She stayed with him, unaware of the time and its passing. After what seemed like hours, she abruptly held her breath. Her body knew before her mind could grasp it. Martin had stopped breathing. For a while there was total silence, then she began breathing again, slowly at first, as if she were learning to do it for the first time. Then, normally. She became aware of other movements and sounds, the hum of the air conditioner, distant voices and footsteps, the flow of blood in her veins. She cut off all his connections, the IV lines, the breathing tube, the catheter. She opened the door to call the night nurse and reminded herself to keep the smile in her heart from reaching her lips.
Marty!
Yes!
In a historic context, mm-hmm. What is with death and the practices revolving around it?
The oldest I was able to research online would be from ancient Mesopotamia. According to worldhistory.org, many literary texts, most famously the Epic of Gilgamesh, contemplate the meaning of death, recount the fate of the dead in the netherworld, and describe mourning rites. Other texts were probably composed in order to be recited during religious rites involving ghosts or dying gods. Of these ritual texts, the most notable are Gilgamesh, Enkidu and the Netherworld, Ishtar's Descent to the Netherworld, and Nergal and Ereshkigal.
I'm familiar with Gilgamesh.
Yep. Humans were considered alive. The Akkadian term is called Awilu, I think that's how I pronounce it. Spelled A-W-I-L-U.
Okay.
As long as they had blood in their veins and breath in their nostrils. At the moment when humans were emptied of blood or exhaled their last breath, their bodies were considered empty cadavers. The Akkadian term is called Pagaru, spelled P-A-G-A-R-U. The condition of this empty corpse is compared to deep sleep and, upon burial in the ground, the body fashioned from clay returned to clay.
Wow.
Yeah. The Mesopotamians did not view physical death as the ultimate end of life. The dead continued an animated existence in the form of a spirit, designated by the Sumerian term Gidim, spelled G-I-D-I-M. Its Akkadian equivalent, Etemu, spelled E-T-E-M-M-U. The Etemu is best understood as a ghost. Its etiology is described in the Old Babylonian Atrasis Epic 1, which recounts the creation of humans from the blood of the slain god We-Ilu. The text uses wordplay to connect the Etemu to a divine quality. We-Ilu is characterized as one who has Temu, meaning understanding or intelligence. Thus, humans were thought to be composed of a corporeal body and some type of divine insight.
Divine insight? Wow.
Yeah. Proper burial and mourning of the corpse was essential for the Etemu's transition to the next world. Some texts, such as Gilgamesh and Enkidu and the Netherworld, indicate that the deceased's lot in the underworld depended on the number of children one had. The more descendants, the more privileged the Etemu's existence in the netherworld.
Wow.
For there were more relatives to ensure the performance of necessary post-mortem rituals. The netherworld was devoid of any palatable nourishment. As the death of Ur-Nama articulates, the food of the netherworld is bitter and the water is brackish. The ghost was therefore dependent on the living for subsistence, which was provided through offerings of food and beverage. Absence of offerings reduced the Etemu to a beggar's existence in the netherworld. The primary responsibility for performing these offerings fell to the eldest son of the deceased. One of the most vivid portrayals of the netherworld describes a subterranean great city. The Sumerian term is Irigal, protected by seven walls and gates where the spirits of the dead dwell. Hence, Mesopotamian funerary rites for the elite could last up to 7 days. As long as offerings continued regularly, the Etemu remained at peace in the netherworld. Pacified ghosts were friendly and could be induced to aid the living, or at least were prevented from harming them. A person who did not receive proper burial rites or cultic offerings, however, became a restless ghost or vicious demon. Some cases where this could occur included people who were left unburied, suffered a violent death, or other natural end, or died unmarried. The Mesopotamians developed many magical means of dealing with vengeful ghosts. Some methods include the tying of magical knots, the manufacturing of amulets, smearing on magical ointments, drinking magical potions, the burial of a surrogate figurine representing the ghost, and the pouring libations while reciting incantations.
Thank you for taking us back to the history of it all.
Yeah, I found it fascinating.
Yeah.
How about you, Cookie?
Okay, time for trivia.
Trivia.
Did you know that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on Maya Angelou's birthday, April 4, in 1968, and his death deeply affected her?
Oh, I'm sure. That's so tragic.
Yeah, enough to stop her from celebrating her own birthday for many years.
No way.
Yeah. Did you know that Do Not Go Gentle, uh-huh, Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas, right, was written as his father lay on his deathbed?
Oh, wow.
I remember I mentioned this on episode 62 in passing.
Right, yep.
Anyway, the message that Thomas was conveying to his father was his passionate desire that his father not take death lying down.
Uh-huh.
Don't go. Fight. Death is an injustice. Mm. Show your passion for life by not going gentle into that good night. That's what he was expressing on the verge of his father slipping away.
Oh.
I'd say that's deeply moving.
That's
knowing
true.
The background of poems we study in school and our libraries really gives it more life and meaning.
That's true.
Okay, did you know that "O Captain, My Captain"
right,
was written in honor of President Abraham Lincoln after his assassination in 1865 and was published in Whitman's anthology, Leaves of Grass?
Ah.
Yeah, the poem is a metaphor to the Civil War, and the captain of the ship refers to Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that the sonnet, The Cross of Snow, is an expression of grief by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow over the tragic death of his wife by fire?
What? No way.
Yeah. The poem was written 18 years after her death. While trying to save her, Longfellow was burnt on his face.
Oh, no.
After which he stopped shaving and grew the distinctive beard which he is known by. The beard suits him.
Ah.
Did you know,
uh-huh,
that there's a sort of an authorship dispute about this extremely famous bereavement poem that has been read at countless funerals and public occasions?
Really?
Yeah. The first line goes, "Do not stand at my grave and weep." There are in existence many slightly different versions of the poem. Written in the 1930s, it was repopularized during the late 1970s thanks to a reading by John Wayne at a funeral.
Mm.
Mary Elizabeth Fry, a florist from Baltimore, MD, claimed to have composed this poem in 1932 in a moment of inspiration to comfort a family friend who had just lost her mother and was unable to even visit her grave.
Oh.
However, The poem was only first formally published in the December 1934 issue of the Gypsy Poetry magazine, which was titled Immortality, with the author as Claire Harner from Kansas.
Oh.
Ooh, controversy.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Miguel Espiritu with A Craving.
A Craving. There are no mangoes waiting in heaven. No golden flesh to greet you at the gates. They sit in bowls on rickety tables in your Lola's house in the old city, where you broke glass and were forgiven, where the walls still hum your songs, where to someone you will always be 8, watching kids' shows on Saturday mornings. And blackouts in heavy rain are met with Monopoly and your father's Aroscaldo. When you think to find fruit, remember. When you think to find fruit, remember.
Marty!
Yes, Miss Cookie.
Let's talk about memorable deaths in fiction. Who do you remember? Who would you give honor to?
You know when villains die,
my
usual would be capital F for finally you're dead. Sorry, don't mean to be rude.
Okay.
But when you encounter villains that although they deserve to die, if the life they were given was unfair, or maybe the choices presented to them was very limited and they end up losing their life, it is quite sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
With that said, on the top of my head, there's this kids' book series called or entitled Percy Jackson.
Oh.
Had characters named Luke Castellan and Ethan Nakamura. But because Cookie said no spoilers. Yeah, grab your books. So you know what happened to them.
Okay.
How about you, Cookie?
My heart goes out to Piggy in Lord of the Flies by William Golding.
No.
Yeah. Piggy represents the goodness in humanity and it's just unfortunate to have to die a tragic death. Our episode 56 on grief could also give you added knowledge and a better understanding of today's topic.
Yep.
Moving on, we give you Mark Estada with Katanungan.
Ano nga ba ang rason sa atin sa paglikha? Tayo ba'y tao-tauhan lamang sa isang akda? Na may iisang layunin at iisang paksa, pasunurin mga tauhan gamit lamang ang banta. Kaliwat kanan na digmaan ng mga bansa, hudyat ba ng pagtatapos, dapat na nga pang magganda. Kargutuman at dilubyong hindi kayang masangga, kremeng hindi makatwiran sino nga bang mayakda. Dinisenyo ka ba para paligayahin ng iba? E para saan sila dinisenyo? Para paligayahin mo sila, kasiyahan na sukdulan ay nasa na kaya. Sa mundo pinagpaguran mo'y wala ring mapapala. Katotohanan ba? O imbento lamang na madla? Paano kung totoo nga na sa'yo'y meron ng inihanda? Marami pang katanungan sa utak ko na katala. Tulad ng nilikha ba tayo para dito sa mundo? O para dun sa kabila?
We would like to thank Dr. Suzanne Twason for her support.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Much love from Manila to California.
Woohoo, hugs.
We can all agree that entertainment in whatever form, books, TV, movies, even podcasts, help us engage with a serious existential question of death. But death is not the end game.
Yep.
It is how we face it. How we deal with it, that matters.
That's true.
Carpe diem. I'm Cookie.
I'm Marty.
Thank you for listening to Bicas Filipinas.